all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information. Good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to another Friday, this time on remote in Manitowoc County, but we're still in the state of Wisconsin sense, even when we're not on Lake Wissota, and it's always a beautiful day up north. And as we explain all the time, up north is kind of more of a state of mind. It's not always if you're north of Highway 29 or wherever. And so even here in Manitowoc County, we more than qualify as up north, shall we say. So it's nice to have you along on this Friday, May 5th, or Cinco de Mayo, as some people like to call it. And we'll talk more about that particular holiday, quote unquote, in just a minute. It is 50 degrees in Chippewa Falls. It's 48 degrees here in Manitowoc, also in Amory. Now, Oshkosh, where I was yesterday, clocking in at 55. In Green Bay, it's 50 degrees. Madison, 58. And in Wausau, 43. Coming up on the show this morning, some moderate extremism, because that sells better than a little light treason, you know. While some states led by right-wing politicians are trying to out-extreme one another, others are trying to be a bit more crafty and make their extremism appear to be moderate. We're going to decode some of that language and the real impact of those policies, moderate as they sound, with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. We'll also talk about the Kentucky Derby. It's a mess. Not so much the Derby, but horse racing itself is not having a great week leading into their big day. And it is a big day sports-wise as the Milwaukee Bucks fired their head coach. In our second hour, recall we were in Oshkosh yesterday, and we learned that there's a podcast dedicated to the city's movers and shakers and leaders and boosters. And so we will talk to Timber Smith, host of the Kosh podcast. And we'll also review how the media has covered some of this week's big stories and how they have not covered a big story, even when that story involved a reporter being subjected to a meltdown by a former president. That's ahead. We talk about that with Mark Jacob. He is off this week, but we'll still cover the topics in our 7 o'clock hour. Reminder that even when we're on the road here, if you have a comment on something that we're talking about and want to chime in, 844-967-2789 is the number to call. And keep that number in mind because we're going to be giving away Brewers tickets during our 6:50 segment. Now, I know they're not back home yet, but they will be next week. They have a big 3-game set against the Dodgers. And so we are going to have tickets for next Tuesday evening's game against the Los Angeles Dodgers at American Family Field. And so when the time comes, we're going to ask a Wisconsin trivia question, and then you'll be the first one in with the correct answer at 844-967-2789. And those tickets can be yours for next Tuesday's game. Aaron Zommers joins us now from Madison. How are things down there so far this morning, sir?
Pretty nice. Once again, it's good to be able to drive to work when the sun is out.
Yeah, it's great. And here, where I'm visiting out in Manitowoc County, I'm in the upstairs of a farmhouse, which has just this perfect line of sight to a cell tower out in the middle of the field. So I really hope there's no excuses for us not to have a good connection with you throughout the day today. Just saw a couple of deer running through the field over here, which makes sense because my brother-in-law, who took over the dairy farm here, they're not milking anymore, but he doesn't go hunting. He hears everybody else talk about going out and hunting. And then he says, well, you should have been in the tractor with me because the deer are crossing the fields all the time there.
Yep. That's always how it goes.
Yep. I'm so close to your stomping grounds. Is there anything I need to go? Do you want me to pick up anything while I'm up here? Do you want me to say hi to anybody? Or?
Well, I mean, you'd have to, if you were picking up something, you'd have to come a long way back down to Madison before going back home. But
oh, you're right. That was kind of a... That was almost not a sincere effort that I was making to get you something here. But if I were going to pay your regards to anybody, where would I stop? Where would I walk into? And they would say, Aaron, the way that, at Cheers, they'd say, Norm.
My house or my parents' house.
Yep. And even then, would they? Or would they just go, oh, hey.
Well, that depends. If my niece, Gracie, is there, then she'd be like, Uncle Aaron. So, yeah.
Aw, that's great. That part's always nice. You know, my wife's family is very affectionate. They're huggers and everything else. And the family I grew up in was not, you know, there was an alcoholic grandfather, and, you know, a lot of people like to keep their distance. And I remember when my wife would get dropped, when she got dropped off at college, like a lot of people, when they get dropped off at college, you know, the parents give them the big hug. There's this big tearful goodbye. And I remember when I left for UW-Eau Claire, I threw whatever I could into the trunk of my 73 Plymouth Fury. And I was like, I'm going. It just, my mom goes, okay, see you later. Like,
yeah. My family's okay. Definitely more of the former.
Really? Okay. We're a lot better now. And I think it's because both I married into a family of huggers, and one of my sisters married into a family of huggers, and taught us that it's okay. It's all right for families to do that. I'm also very thankful that, well, I shouldn't be thankful, but between allergies or whatever, I was not subjected to a lot of having to learn things on the farm. The farmhouse is behind me here out the window on the other side of the field where my wife's brother lives. Her parents live here on the other side of the field. And so the barn's there. Like I said, they don't milk anymore. But I think I've told the story once before about her dad. As soon as I meet him, I walk in during the evening milking. And after we've driven across the state, he says, well, you want to help? Sure. He says, well, go milk number 16 there. And he gives me the dip. And I go, and just as I'm bending over, he's like, no, no, no. And I step back and realize there's no udders underneath that thing. It's a bull. So thankfully, yikes. She didn't, you know, yeah, Sherry's always thankful that, you know, she didn't bring her first college boyfriend home and have him get kicked to death by a bull. Let's take a break. We'll give sports and much more coming up right after this. You're up north. Welcome back. It's Friday morning. This is Up North News Radio from Manitowoc County. Pat Kreitlow here. Nice to have you along. Offering our congratulations. Hey, Aaron, had you seen the news that our friend Kristen Bry is expecting?
Yeah, I heard that yesterday. Congratulations.
That was the big surprise that Kristen Lyerly hinted at, a baby girl is on the way come October. How great is that? The Civic Media family just continues to grow.
Just a little bit bigger.
Yeah, I like how she was saying, okay, we have an announcement. What might it be? And people were putting in all their guesses. And I don't know if anybody guessed baby or not, but, you know, so good on her. So congratulations to Kristen. And, you know, as goes Wisconsin, just gets a little bit bigger and better and more family friendly all the time. Let's do sports at 6:16. The Milwaukee Bucks have fired coach Mike Budenholzer just over a week after that stunning first-round playoff loss to the Miami Heat spoiled a season in which they owned the NBA's best record. The Bucks posted the most combined regular season and playoff wins of any team during Budenholzer's tenure, and he had the league's best regular season record in three of his five seasons on the job. His final win-loss mark was 271 wins over only 120 losses in the regular season. His playoff record was 39-26, but it was especially those last two playoff losses that did him in and had the team thinking they needed a change. Bud's ouster comes just 2 years after he directed the Bucks to their first title in half a century. And the move also comes just 3 weeks after the team gets a new ownership stake. Jimmy Haslam, who's also the owner of the Cleveland Browns football team, purchased a 25% stake in the team. Don't know if the two are related, but certainly worth mentioning. On the drive out here, I left Oshkosh after speaking to a conference out there about digital media, and got in the car to make the drive out to Manitowoc. And at that point, the seventh inning stretch had just been held for the Brewers-Rockies game. And the Colorado Rockies were losing to the Brewers 4-0 going into the bottom of the seventh. By the time the bottom of the seventh was over, the game was tied 4-4. By the time the eighth inning was over, the Rockies were up 9-4. They scored 4 in the seventh, 5 in the eighth. The Brewers got a couple of runs in garbage time in the ninth inning, but lost to Colorado 9-6. That's four losses in a row for the Brewers, longest drought of the season. It's also their seventh loss in their past 10 games, and that was after getting off to a 15-6 start. There were homers because, again, it is Colorado. So Christian Yelich, Rowdy Tellez, Tyrone Taylor each hit solo homers for the Brewers. And now they're in San Francisco taking on the Giants for three games. Corbin Burnes will pitch tonight. There will be a Saturday evening game, a Sunday afternoon game. And then they come right home to play the Los Angeles Dodgers Monday, Tuesday, and then an afternoon game on Wednesday. And again, we will have tickets to Tuesday's game coming up at 6:50. But a reminder anytime that if you're on a Civic Media radio station in Oshkosh or Richland Center, you can listen to the Brewers on those stations. I did on 98.3 Oshkosh Air Support on the way over here. Now, you can't talk about sports without talking about the Kentucky Derby, which is coming up tomorrow. But with literally hours, 48 hours before horse racing's signature event, Kentucky racing officials have thrown a horse out of the race under a cloud of suspicion after two of his trainer's other horses collapsed and died without explanation over the past week. The horse that was pulled, his name was Lord Miles, and his trainer, Saffel Joseph Jr., he's no stranger to trouble. Now, again, two of his other horses died in the past week after sustaining leg injuries. Two other horses not trained by Joseph have also died in the past week, including a colt who was scheduled to run in the Derby. So one's been pulled, one died. But back to Joseph, he was fined $500 for a positive test for an illegal substance in Florida in 2015. He was fined $1,000 for a positive test in New Jersey in 2021. Given a fine and a 15-day suspension because of a positive test in Pennsylvania in 2022. Seems like the guy just goes from state to state. The Kentucky State Police should have stopped him at the border. But horse racing right now is really, in many ways, fighting for its life. You have, of course, animal rights activists calling for its end at the same time that gambling on professional sports has taken off. One of the big draws for, gambling on horse racing was that you couldn't gamble on professional sports. But now you can, and it's growing by leaps and bounds, and horse racing is taking a hit as a result. Not to mention just the image of what's happening to the animals here. Trainers have been experimenting with anything that will give their horses an edge. I was looking at one article in the New York Times, and it says, including chemicals that bulk up pigs and cattle before slaughter, cobra venom, Viagra, blood doping agents, stimulants, and cancer drugs. And detection is difficult as laboratories scramble to keep up. But again, you got to feel for the horse because they were already replaced once by the internal combustion engine. And now they're being replaced again by sports gambling, so that maybe we should just stick to just gentle rides, along trails, or, go over to Mackinac Island and, ride the horses that way, if that's the kind of thing that you want to do. Turning to news back closer to Wisconsin now, Governor Tony Evers did not waste time rejecting what Republicans were proposing for a quote-unquote reform of shared revenue. It's a plan that has a lot of strings attached and removes even more local control. And Governor Evers made it pretty clear he wants nothing to do with that bill and that Republicans should stop playing games because everybody agrees if there's bipartisanship on one thing, it's that shared revenue has been cut too far, needs to be brought back up. And Evers is saying, just give me a clean bill. We have a record surplus. Let's just get that done. And he put together a video statement, and I think it's about 90 seconds or so. So let's give a listen to that.
We've been talking about shared revenue now for the four plus years I've been in this position, and for good reason. Our communities, whether it's a county, whether it's a city, whether it's a township, they do the hard work, public safety, public health, you name it, public libraries. And for a decade, we have not increased it in any, that money that goes to these folks in any meaningful way. We need more money for our communities. Their constituents expect it. We expect them to do this work. So it's a top priority for me. It has been since I became governor, and I'm really optimistic because I see that same thinking coming out of the legislature. So we're all on the same page there, but the state must step up more than what I've seen. It's why I can't support the Republican plan as is, and frankly, I'll veto it in its entirety. It is not enough resources. We have the resources to do it. Let's increase the money that's going to the locals. And frankly, also let's kind of remove all those restrictions that the legislation was putting on those local folks. You know, here we, in one way, we want to bring them more money, and in another way, we want to take more control away from them. It doesn't make sense. Send me a clean bill that talks about the money that we're going to give to the municipalities. Let's work together to make it happen, and I know we can get it done.
So there's Governor Evers making it very clear that it's a bad idea. Now, the Republican leaders, of course, responded with, you know, woe is us. Why is the governor so mean? But again, it's that bill with all the ridiculousness in it, right down to quotas for traffic tickets and arrests. This bill was a gimmick and deserves, you know, our local units of government and school districts deserve to be treated more fairly. Over to the abortion lawsuit now, something we previewed yesterday morning, and legal arguments are finally underway in Dane County Circuit Court challenging the 1849 abortion ban and whether it is actually superseded by a 1985 law that more or less takes Wisconsin closer to where we were under Roe v. Wade. Dane County Judge Diane Schlipper heard about 90 minutes worth of arguments and said she would issue a ruling soon on a motion from one of the district attorneys to dismiss the case. One of the Republican DAs wants the case dismissed. And included in the coverage here from Molly Beck at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, she notes that attorney Leslie Freehill, who represents three doctors, which I believe includes Dr. Lyerly, said her clients need certainty in order to provide life-saving medical care in situations involving serious pregnancy complications. Freehill said, quote, "They're providing care for women who walk into the emergency room door. They need to know what they can do because they make these decisions not within days, not within hours, or within minutes, but in seconds. They need to know what the law allows them to do." And we've heard, you know, Kirsten Lyerly say that many times. The last thing you want anybody doing in the emergency room is a doctor having to stop and say, call a lawyer and see if this is okay or not. The lawyer's not a doctor. The lawyer's not going to save anybody's lives. The lawyer's just there to say whether politicians are getting involved in it or not. And of course, the correct answer is they should not be involved in this at all. So first they're hearing the motion to dismiss, and then the judge will be asked if which takes precedence, the 1849 law or the 1985 law, and give everybody some clarity on there. All right, when we have our next segment with Kia Vakil, and as we've mentioned before, because he's in Los Angeles, we pre-taped that interview, but we talked to him about some of the things going on in the news this week. And so I want to get to one of the stories that we didn't cover, but is all in the same kind of theme of trying to keep extremism under wraps in this country. And the latest involves Ginny Thomas, the wife of Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. According to documents reviewed by the Washington Post, Ginny Thomas was paid tens of thousands of dollars for consulting work on the instruction of judicial activist Leonard Leo. We've told you about him. His coziness with politicians has led him to all but deciding some of the most recent right-wing picks for justice. Leo arranged for Ginny Thomas to be paid while specifying that her name be left off the billing paperwork. So you couldn't have that transparency of knowing that Leonard Leo was functioning not only as just an ideological ally of Clarence Thomas, but also was working to provide financial compensation to the family. Leo was arranging for money to be drawn from a nonprofit that soon would have an interest before the court. And this is only the latest instance where you have Thomas helping send a kid through college, again, with help from that other billionaire, Harlan Crow, who's been a benefactor of his. The corruption is just dripping, and it's taking a while to point out the extremism that's going on here, but it is happening. And the same can be said about the attempt for an abortion ban in North Carolina, for example, where they're trying to look moderate in how they do it, but it is still essentially a de facto ban, as Kia Vakil is going to tell us about that and some other stories coming up. So a reminder that, you know, we're covered with you here. We're up early on the radio. We've got uplifting stories from Christina Laurie, and we keep you up to date on social media news and features with Sherita Booker, who will be our guest on Monday, as she helps us look back at some of the most popular stories that are read or watched at Up North News. So you can catch all of our work at Up North News WI on social media and upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be back with Kia. You're Up North. It's time now to visit with Courier Newsroom national correspondent Kia Vakil. Kia, how are you?
Hey, Pat. I'm all right. How about yourself?
I'm good. By the way, we wear many hats here at Courier Newsroom. I mean, I get to be the founding editor. I get to be the chief political correspondent, the radio host. And I've never really given you your proper due because national correspondent falls out so much easier. What are you now, deputy political poobah? Or what? How does that work?
It's deputy political editor, I believe, is the most recent title, which is just a fancy way of saying I edit a lot of political stories and write some as well.
Well, I say that because he edits my stories and he does it masterfully. And I appreciate that very much and want people to know that we don't just, you know, sit here and yap about these things. We write about them. We edit the stories. We do the research. And yep. So let's get into that. Now, from a national standpoint, you know, of things happening in Washington, D.C., the thing right now, of course, is the showdown over the debt ceiling. And I hasten to add again, showdown is the wrong frame. This is Republicans holding the national economy hostage unless Joe Biden saves them from themselves. That's my take on it. As we record this on a Wednesday afternoon, it appears that the president and congressional leaders will be meeting in the not too distant future. But for now, this week has been marked by all kinds of posturing that doesn't seem to bode well for avoiding a recession.
No, I mean, here's the problem is Republicans are, you know, what John Boehner used to refer to them as legislative terrorists. And that was the House Freedom Caucus, which is now basically driving the car in the Republican Party in the House. And so they say they will not raise the debt ceiling unless Biden and Democrats agree to pretty big spending cuts on programs like health care, food assistance, child care, potentially veterans care. And, you know, rightly, the Biden administration has rejected that outright. But, you know, and in a sane world, you know, Republicans would just raise the debt limit, you know, like Democrats did several times under the Trump administration. But we do not live in a sane political world. We have people like Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Taylor Greene at the wheel of the car. And so there's every reason to think that they will just let the U.S. default on its debt. And the consequences of that would be catastrophic. People with hundreds of thousands of people would lose their jobs probably within a few weeks. If it goes on for months, you know, you could see retirement accounts be wiped out. You could see millions of people lose their jobs. And here's the thing, you know, there's a very fair question about whether that's actually what Republicans want, because there is a history of Republicans trying to block progress and obstruct and create chaos when Democrats are in the White House because they think it will help them electorally. They did it in the Obama era. They've tried to do it where they can in the Biden era. And, you know, there are a lot of, and I want to be clear here, there are some Republicans who in the House who probably don't want that, who definitely don't want to default. But there are enough who are willing to play with fire that this is, you know, that's where we're headed right now.
Essentially rooting for the economy to fail in a way that would have been so unseemly for an elected official. But when you're only now thinking about your party's wins and losses rather than what's good for the country, this is the kind of outcome that you can expect. Now, I will say, to be fair, I guess, on the Republican side, that, you know, Kevin McCarthy had to go through, what, 15 votes to get in. He had a very, you know, a shaky grasp on power. And yet somehow or another, I don't know what this says about the Republican caucus, but there's not a lot of vocal defectors. The Republicans are, you know, thanks to Ron Johnson in part on the Senate side, they seem to be holding firm to this lemmings off a cliff stance that they're taking.
Yeah, well, I mean, they managed to pass their bill by the narrowest of margins last week, literally lost as many votes as they could. And, you know, the House bill to raise the debt ceiling in exchange for huge spending cuts. And so, you know, rightly or wrongly, they are now kind of at a consensus that we passed a bill. It's up to Democrats to actually meet us at the negotiating table. But here's the problem with that is if you negotiate with people who just want to cut, without regard for what, you know, that's, you're going to end up negotiating a bad deal. And so the Biden administration's tactics on actual negotiating make a lot of sense, but they're not dealing with rational actors. So the real problem here is, you know, I don't envy the White House, frankly, or Democrats in the Senate, because right now you're hoping that there are enough rational Republicans in the House who get scared about an economic collapse who buck McCarthy and force him to act on a clean debt ceiling increase or work with Democrats to pass an increase. And that may happen, you know, if 3 to 4 weeks of really bad headlines and a lot of big donors complaining, that may generate some movement. But, you know, right now we're in a stalemate because Republicans, you know, want to cut healthcare and food assistance and veterans care rather than raise taxes on the billionaires.
All right, let's move away from D.C. and into the states where the news hasn't been great. But again, part of what we do is highlight what is happening. And we're going to start with North Carolina, because North Carolina has the Republicans controlling government there have done some things here that obviously on their face seem bad. It's a little surprising to me because these are the same North Carolina Republicans who recently said, we're going to accept the Medicaid expansion. It was, you know, they were one of the last holdouts. Now Wisconsin is just one of the last holdouts. So the North Carolina Republicans looked like they were doing something sensible by taking the Medicaid expansion. But since that time, they're working to, you know, rig the maps. They're working to suppress votes. And they're working to have as close to an abortion ban as they can possibly get. And I mean, right now, there's really nothing stopping them.
No, I mean, like you said, they agreed to a deal to expand Medicaid a couple months back. That was after years and years of delays and years of pressure, and lots of rural voters with Republican representatives like pressuring their lawmakers. So that's a huge win. But, you know, we're now seeing today that the North Carolina House, I think literally as we speak, you know, will be passing an abortion ban, and the Senate will be doing it shortly after. And it's a 12-week ban, you know, which is not as extreme as some of the 6-week bans, but, you know, it's still well before some women are able to access abortion care. There are all sorts of restrictions on, you know, I think it's a 72-hour waiting period. You have to go to an in-person visit to get medication abortion. There are some exceptions until, you know, the 20-week and 24-week mark. So it's not as extreme as it could be. But it's still an abortion ban, and it will still make it impossible for women, not just in North Carolina, but all across the South, because abortion's illegal everywhere else right now in that region, to have to travel out of state to get care. It'll lead to doctors leaving the state, as has happened in Wisconsin under their ban. And they're doing this less than a week after the state Supreme Court basically gave the legislature free rein to gerrymander and to pass strict voter ID laws. So I don't think that's a coincidence that you're seeing Republicans ban abortion in the state after they basically got a green light to gerrymander and draw district maps in a way that voters can't do anything about it.
Gerrymandering. What do we always say on the show? It's one hell of a drug. And yet you're, like you said, they're being rather strategic instead of wanting to out extreme every other state. You did a 6-week ban, we'll do a 5-week ban. They're picking this 12-week that looks reasonable, you know, but isn't. And like you said, the taking the Medicaid expansion is one of those things where, despite having control of everything, they're definitely being a lot more strategic than, say, Wisconsin Republicans, who, you know, took 500 plus items from Governor Evers and just said, "Oh, nope, we don't want any of that." They went with the farthest extreme position. North Carolina, just a little bit more strategic than that.
Yes. And, you know, to be clear, North Carolina has a Democratic governor right now, but the legislator has a supermajority because a moderate Democrat just became a Republican recently in the House. So I think the North Carolina Republicans have long been one of the more strategic state parties. They gerrymander themselves at every opportunity. They, you know, pass, they give just enough wiggle room to, you know, pretend like they're not as extreme as lawmakers in some other states. And that's what they're doing with this abortion ban. You know, it's, is it the worst abortion bill that's been passed? No, but it's still an abortion ban. You're still telling women that at 12 weeks and one day, if you've struggled to get an abortion appointment for the last 4 weeks, even if you wanted to, you can no longer have an abortion in North Carolina at 12 weeks and one day, because this law has erected so many hurdles and so many arbitrary points, arbitrary timelines, that you can't control your own body. And that's extreme. It just is.
The things that Republicans have been doing, it would be one thing if they were doing this strictly on principle, but it's another thing entirely when they take things a step further and go down a path toward downright corruption, which of course takes us to Florida and Governor Ron DeSantis, who, again, in my upbringing, there was not a single Republican politician who was against transparency and letting the people know what their elected officials are doing. Governor DeSantis, meanwhile, is getting the legislature to essentially go along with hiding more things from the public.
Yeah, so the Florida legislature has passed a law that will effectively conceal his travel records and, you know, travel plans from the public. And that includes past visits. So if you're a reporter who has a question about a trip he went on, you know, earlier this year or last year, you're kind of, you know, out of luck. And, you know, there are questions about why this bill is becoming law. He's obviously, you know, going to run for president, it appears. He's been traveling all across the country and the world, frankly, ahead of his announcement. And there are questions about who is funding that travel. Is it taxpayer funded? Are there private donors funding it? He took a charter jet recently, and those things aren't cheap. And so it basically, you know, whether or not he's doing anything wrong is sort of besides the point. We actually just don't know. He could be doing nothing wrong or unethical, but the fact that they're passing a law that removes any option or pathway to know for transparency, for accountability, is a problem. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you should want your lawmakers to be transparent and accountable to you.
Interestingly enough, though, even though what that does is kind of thwart reporters who are trying to, you know, represent the public, the legislature wouldn't go quite as far as DeSantis wanted and actually lift some of the protections on reporters who do some of the shield laws and rules on defamation and things like that. It seems like the legislature says, well, we'll save you to a point, but there is a bridge too far.
Yeah, and I want to be clear here. I don't think that's because the legislator suddenly developed a spine or a backbone. It's because that proposal would affect right-wing media arguably more than mainstream or, you know, liberal media. You know, I don't think this is false to say that there are so many right-wing outlets out there that don't publish any sort of actual news. They publish rumors, false stories, gossip, harassment. And if you crack down on freedom of the press and make it easier to sue for defamation, there'd be lawsuits all over the place at left-wing outlets, right-wing outlets, mainstream. So it's actually, and in Florida, which is becoming more of a right-wing state, which has a kind of robust right-wing media ecosystem, there's an argument to be made that that bill actually would have hurt, you know, Republicans more than Democrats and liberal media.
So they actually remember, you know, it seems like ancient history, but they remember the Dominion voting system's defamation suit that was actually going to go places. We're just going to close with my own opinion. Ron DeSantis is underwhelming so many people. He is the Chris Christie of the past. He's the Rudy Giuliani of the past. It always seems in every presidential cycle there's usually a Republican, but sometimes a Democrat Howard Dean, you know, they peak so early and everybody says it's inevitable. And then there's this flame out. And again, we don't know for sure, but boy, he sure is giving every indication that he's the 2024 version of that.
Yeah, and I think that's right.
I think much like Dominion, you know, what they did to Fox and Tucker Carlson, I sure got a sneaky suspicion that Disney is going to end up having the last laugh on that one. Kia Vakil, thank you very much. We appreciate it greatly. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat.
As always, our great thanks to Kia. Oh, look at that. I was looking at the video feed here. The sunrise is starting to come right through the window here. So I'll have to go work on that curtain here. Didn't mean to blind you watching on Facebook. We will give away some Brewers tickets, have today's history lesson and music break coming up in just a couple of minutes on Up North News Radio. Yeah, it's time for a slow dance. Go grab your partner. One time around the kitchen, what do you say, with peaches and herb?
I was a fool to ever leave your side.
Peaches and herb, number one song this day in 1979, Reunited. Perhaps one of the more schmaltzy, schlocky songs of the late 70s. And of course, that's why it went to number one for a time and then was ridiculed sometime after that. But while they play in the background, and before we get to the rest of today's history lesson and music break, let's give away a couple of Brewers tickets to next Tuesday night's game against the LA Dodgers at American Family Field. This one may be a little tougher, but you know, it's the Dodgers. It's a good series. These are great seats. This 33,000-acre marsh in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties is one of the largest freshwater marshes in the United States, where thousands of ducks and Canada geese stop to rest during their migration. What's the name of this great big marsh in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties? First person through with the correct answer, who can get tickets emailed to them, who hasn't won anything in the past 30 days and can put the tickets to good use and go to the game, should call 844-967-2789 and get yourself those tickets to next Tuesday's Brewers game. All right, back to history. Speaking of the Kentucky Derby, Secretariat won the Derby on this day in 1973. Can't believe it's been 50 years now. I remember seeing that race. I was 9 years old at the time. And it was, have you ever, Aaron, seen video of Secretariat running in these races?
I have not.
Oh my God. I mean, I think it came out later that the horse had like a super enlarged heart or something like that, but just won these races by, like, I think won the Belmont by 31 lengths or something like that. It was insane. But the Kentucky Derby win was 50 years ago today. Michael Palin turns 80 today from Monty Python. Former NBC Nightly News anchor Brian Williams turns 64 today, or so he would have us believe. Singer Adele is 35 years old today. Here was the number one hit by the Shirelles on this day in 1962.
Soldier boy, oh my little soldier boy.
A song all about staying faithful while their boyfriends are off at war. Not to be confused with who there, Aaron?
With Soulja Boy, S-O-U-L-J-A. You know, like, did the song Crank That? Like, oh, crank that Soulja Boy, now you know, that song.
Once again, I wonder if Aaron's making stuff up just to throw me off.
I wish I were.
Yeah. Hey, this is a serious historical day for Wisconsin. Workers in Milwaukee on this day in 1886 were marching because they wanted, get this, an 8-hour work day. And of course the business community did not want that to be the case, and so workers were protesting, striking, marching. And on this day, several Wisconsinites were shot and killed by National Guardsmen in what became known as the Bayview Massacre. And it became a turning point in public support for the labor movement to have workers treated more humanely and to have things like an 8-hour workday, not 12 or 18 or 20. All right, this is Cinco de Mayo from a history standpoint. What does that really mean? It doesn't mean that, you know, Corona did something really important with beer on this day or whatever the case may be. No, this was when Mexico triumphed over the French Empire on this day in 1862. They were outnumbered 3-1, 6,000 troops to 2,000 at the Battle of Puebla on this day. It's much more popular here in America, of course, than in Mexico. On the positive side, it's used to celebrate Mexican-American culture. It's often confused with Mexican Independence Day, but that is actually on September 16th. Another historical note, this day in 1904 was the first perfect game thrown by a pitcher. It was, as you might have guessed, Cy Young, for whom the big pitching award is named. He was pitching for the Philadelphia Athletics and he was pitching against the Philadelphia Athletics. Cy Young was with the Boston Americans at the time and threw the first perfect game in the modern era of baseball. Let's see. Bad Religion released their 10th studio album, No Substance, on this day in 1998. And Avril Lavigne had her only number one hit on this day in 2007 with Girlfriend. So, Aaron, this leads to this question. Up until about 18 hours ago, I don't know that I'd ever heard Avril Lavigne's Girlfriend, which, again, should not surprise most people given my age and things like that. But I do know Avril Lavigne. I do know some songs. And I actually have one of her songs. When I looked on my phone, you know, there is one song I downloaded and liked. I really like the song My Happy Ending. I think it's, you know, it's got a good beat. You can dance to it, whatever the case may be. A lot of songs I don't hear. So it raised this point. What are examples of artists and songs where you know who the artist is, but you really only have one song that you like or one song that you've downloaded? And I'm kind of putting you on the spot on that one, but think about that, because I did think of another example. I'm really calling myself out on this, but you've got, who am I thinking of? Kelly Clarkson. Again, you know, I've got one song downloaded since you've been gone. I really like that song.
It's a good song.
I have no need to download the rest. And I think we all have some examples of it. So I thought I'd let you ruminate on that and see if you could think of anybody who, yep, I've got one song by that artist. I don't really need to download anything else from them.
Yeah, nothing is coming to mind off the top of my head, but I'm sure that there are some of those.
Oh, yeah. So think about that. Look at your phone. Look in your, you know, look in your, what, the iPod. Does anybody have an iPod anymore?
I do, It's definitely dead and in a drawer somewhere.
Yep. So think about that. Hey, let's get back to our trivia question here for Brewers tickets, because we haven't had a correct guess yet. I don't believe. I can't see the phone line, so Aaron's going to have to let me know when or if somebody comes in with that. But what is the name of the 33,000-acre marsh in Dodge and Fond du Lac counties, one of the largest in the country, where thousands of ducks and Canada geese stop to rest during migration? If you can answer that question and want to go to the Brewers game, haven't gone in the past 30 days, or haven't won tickets from us, I should say, and can have the tickets emailed, then you call 844-967-2789. And the thing is, now that I know that these are great seats and this is going to be a great series, you know, the question's a little tougher. And if we don't get a winner, we just hand them over to Todd Alba. And if Todd Alba doesn't give away tickets during his show, then he'll hand them over to either Kristen Bry or Luke Mathers and Brian with the Dueling Tangents. If they make it all the way to Devil's Advocates, I'd be, you know, downright shocked. But we'll just keep the line going, as they say. So while Mr. Zommers answers that call, we get set to take another break for news. And then in our next hour, Timber Smith will be joining us. He is a podcast host. The podcast is called The Kosh. It's all about Oshkosh, where we were yesterday. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about the show and having him put that together. And this lets me remind you that this is also a podcast, this radio show. You can subscribe to it as a podcast and get your downloads automatically at civicmedia.us. This is Up North News Radio. We'll be back.